Well, I'd like to welcome back Catherine Stewart to the show. It's been a little bit, and we have some important things to talk about when it comes to aquaculture on the coast of British Columbia. Well, as we know, the coast of British Columbia is gigantic, but it is being threatened, on the southern part of it at least, by salmon farming, which is bringing out sea lice and damaging our salmon. Could you tell people about that?
Absolutely. The way that the salmon farms operate in BC is what's called open net cage technology, which are basically nets suspended in the water. And the farms are packed with anywhere from 500,000 to 1 million fish, thousands and thousands per cage. And they are, of course, like any industrial factory farming method, a breeding ground for diseases, but also for a parasite called the sea lice. And the lice breed on the farms and then attack the out-migrating wild juvenile salmon when they're very tiny. They're only about the size of your little finger, the pink and the chum salmon. And so they're extremely susceptible to this parasite, which eats through their flesh, sucks their blood, and kills them. In addition, of course, the open net cage farms also entangle and drown seals and sea lions, harbor porpoises and dolphins who are trying to get at the Atlantic fish that are in the pens. And in a host of ways, through waste deposited on the ocean bottom, disease transfers, escapes, colonization of wild salmon streams, these farms are causing a major environmental problem and huge pressure on our dwindling wild salmon stocks.
That's a long list of problems. So I understand the provincial government struck up a committee to go out and listen to people and come up with some answers. What's come out of that?
Yes, the government established a committee about 18 months ago. It was chaired by the opposition party in British Columbia, the NDP, but also was a bipartisan committee with members of the governing party on the committee as well. They held hearings in coastal communities throughout BC and last week tabled a report and a series of recommendations around the future of farming and how to make salmon farms more sustainable.
And I gather there's been resistance from the government to its own report. What is that about?
Well, there's a lot of resistance because the weight of evidence, of scientific evidence from around the world, indicates that sea lice infesting wild salmon is a huge problem. Unfortunately, both the Canadian federal government and the provincial government scientists prefer to bury their heads in the sand, and almost like the argument on climate change, claim that there isn't proof, there isn't concrete proof. Well, science is like that. Usually what you go with is the weight of scientific evidence, and the vast weight of peer-reviewed evidence indicates there is a problem. The committee recommended some solutions, including no farms north of Vancouver Island in an area where there only are two farms in existence right now. They would grandfather those two existing farms in, but of course the government had a very aggressive expansion agenda for the industry and wanted to see farms spread all up the northern coast of BC. So that's a controversial recommendation, and clearly the salmon farming companies, which are largely Norwegian-owned, are very upset by that. And they also recommended 3 years of research and 2 years of transition to closed, contained tank farming, largely floating ocean-based tanks, which would put an impermeable barrier between the farm fish and the ocean ecosystem and the wild fish. It would virtually eliminate most of the problems. Waste could be recovered, composted, sold as fertilizer, fish could not escape, predators like seals and sea lions would not get tangled in the nets and drown or be shot and killed, which they frequently are by the fish farmers. And the sea lice problem would be addressed and would stop the decimation of our wild stocks. The industry, of course, is resisting this vigorously, saying that it would be too expensive. Actually, their argument is rather amusing. On the one hand, they say it's not used anywhere in the world, it's untried, it's untested technology, and in the same breath say that it would be prohibitively expensive and the industry would go bankrupt. One has to wonder how they can conclude the cost would be prohibitive if the technology is as untested as they claim. But nonetheless, that's the argument they're making.
Well, let's go back just a little bit about having the farms north of the current line where they are, Alaska isn't allowing fish farming at this time, are they? Not in the sense that we're doing it, right in the estuaries.
No, Alaska has completely banned fish farming, and they do a form of sea ranching where salmon are held in nets during the early stages of their life and then turned loose into the ocean. But it's nowhere near the same thing as the farms, which rear the salmon for their whole life cycle and, of course, have all the waste build up and accumulation and the transfer of diseases. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Alaska has banned it. Most of the First Nations north of Vancouver Island along the mainland coast of BC are totally opposed to having fish farms. In fact, the majority of the population, people who rely on commercial fishing, tourism, sports fishing, they all want to protect the wild salmon economy in these areas. There is one First Nation, the Kitisou people, who have two farms in their territory, and the committee recommends that those would be grandfathered in and allowed to continue. And there is another First Nation, the Kitkatla, whose elected chief counselor is trying to lure the farms into their territory, but the majority of his people are vigorously opposed to this.
It's not just environmentalists, then, that are objecting to this one, especially in the north.
No, it's not at all, and in the south as well. First Nations, commercial fishermen, the Wilderness Tourism Association in southern British Columbia has been a staunch opponent of fish farming. They've made their views known quite publicly, and they're a multi-million dollar industry. The problem from their perspective is that wild salmon are the backbone of the coastal temperate rainforest ecosystem. Everything revolves around the wild salmon. The bears, the eagles, the orca whales, even the forest itself feeds off the carcasses of the salmon that are dragged up into the woods by predators.
That's the fertilizer, then.
That's the fertilizer, and about 75% of the nitrogen that feeds those ancient trees, those thousand-year-old cedars in the riparian zones, comes from the wild salmon. So the entire wilderness tourism industry and the sports fishing lodges, all of them are dependent for their business and their survival on healthy wild salmon stocks, and they see the fish farms as a major threat to their future.
So what do you see the next step happening here in British Columbia?
Well, sad to say, I think the government will do everything in its power to bury this report and resist implementing any of the recommendations, but there will be a vigorous campaign by Living Ocean Society, our allies in the Coastal Alliance for Aquaculture Reform, by First Nations, by the tourism industry, to see these recommendations implemented. We're hoping there's an entrepreneur who is trying to raise the last funds needed to set up a commercial-scale closed tank project this year. And we're hoping he's successful and can prove that the technology works and is economically viable. One of the things that the industry keeps claiming is that in order to use these closed tanks, you'd have to rely on power to pump the water, and therefore it would be a greenhouse gas contributor, and it's just a really backwards approach. And they're claiming that, you know, raising the fish in open nets relies on the sun and the tides, and it all sounds so benign. But what they're not talking about is the consumption of fossil fuel involved in the open net cages. They're located in very remote areas. All of the supplies, the feed for the fish themselves, the crews, everything has to be brought in by boat, diesel-consuming boats.
And the feed comes all the way from Chile in some cases, doesn't it?
Largely, yes. And then, of course, because they're in remote locations, they're off the grid, and so they're using diesel generators to power the farms. It's a highly mechanized industry that doesn't employ anywhere near as many people as the fish farmers have long claimed. The committee also undertook an economic analysis, and the fish farming industry has said for years that it employs 5,000 people in BC, and the economists who did the analysis for the committee concluded it was a maximum of 2,900 people, and that includes direct jobs, indirect jobs, and what are known as induced jobs. Jobs in a cafe, for example, that might serve the fish processing plant.
So these big companies, foreign-owned companies generally, can parachute in a factory farming operation right in one of our major salmon-bearing estuaries. And then if the salmon are decimated, I guess they just declare bankruptcy or they'll move on, and we're left with nothing. You can't just regenerate the salmon, can we?
Well, it's a struggle to regenerate the salmon, and you reduce the genetic diversity when you are artificially enhancing salmon rivers, and that genetic diversity is very important for their long-term survival. So it's very true. It's a cut and run type operation. If things don't work out for them here economically, or if it's cheaper to farm in Chile because the labor laws are less stringent there, then that's where they'll move to. But it's true that if the government of British Columbia is more interested in the future of our children and the future health of our province, then they will embrace this report and implement its recommendations. Unfortunately, I'm afraid the government is going to be more interested in the bottom line profits of a couple of very large Norwegian corporations.
And so it goes. We've been talking with Catherine Stewart of the Living Ocean Society, and I really want to thank you for coming on the show today.
Thanks, Alex. My pleasure.
Check out Radio EcoShock, the planet's only all-environment radio station at www.ecoshock.org.